Hello and welcome to The Detail. I'm Polly Scattergood.
And I'm Katie Mellower.
We have a very special guest, the writer of some of the most iconic and heart-wrenching songs, Why Does It Always Rain on Me, Sing, and Love Will Come Through. The melancholic yet joyful spirit soars through his and his band's songs. Please get excited, dear listener, as we have the wonderful Fran Healy on our show. If you enjoy listening to this podcast, it's been lovingly made by me and Katie. The editing, however, has been done by me, Polly Scattergood, in my studio at home. So if you're a fan of this podcast and you'd like to hear more, receive additional content and the odd special treat sent directly from me to you, please head on over to my Patreon page to show your support. The address is patreon.com/Polly Scattergood. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
In today's episode, we'll be exploring intuition while songwriting. And Fran, honestly, you're the best person I know to talk to about this. Firstly, I feel so lucky that we've been exploring and writing over Zoom together in the last few months. And it's your thoughts on writing and listening to the inner voice, or as it's sometimes called, flow writing, that are of particular interest. And I'd love to dive into, you know, some of your thoughts on this and your philosophy on this. Would you be able to go into it, you know, for our listener?
I think there's like two very definite schools of songwriting that I just, but looking at it at first glance, there's probably loads more, but there's two categories that they fall into. One is songs which are designed, and then there, which is you have a brief, you know, it's like you listen to what's going on in the charts. You go, all right, well, this beat's kind of popular just now, and this type of lyric, people singing about this type of thing is popular just now. This type of melody or this type of way of singing is popular just now, and I like this, I like that, and you sort of click it all together like Lego, and it fits into the sort of current zeitgeist. That's songs by design. And then there's the other category, and this is the one that I sort of fall into, which is where you sort of divine a song, like it comes, you feel like it's coming through you, or like, you know, it doesn't, it's not like, it's the opposite of design, because you're not in control of how it's going to turn out. It just comes out of you. And it's a bit of a mystery, but I think once you start poking around, you start to realise, you know, that your experience, your life, whatever you've gone through, is kind of bubbles up from below, and your job as a song diviner, for want of a better term, is to try and switch your brain off and just let this stuff bubble up.
Did that notion or this way of working build up over years? Was there a moment where it really struck you as, yeah, this is absolutely the way that feels right for me to work?
It was just the way I always sort of did it. And I always thought, especially when you get a good song, you go like, wow, where did that come from? Because all these other ones, all the best stuff doesn't feel like you wrote it. That's always a good sign that makes you feel like, oh, right, well, this is good. I think this could be good. All the stuff that's rubbish is where you haven't been quite able to switch off your brain. I think it's probably like meditating. Or being in a lucid dream, you know, that area of where you dream when you're waking up in the morning, or where you're going to sleep at night, where you're between waking up and REM sleep, that deep sleep, that it's that middle light sleep where you're almost in a sort of very, you're in a trance. It's like being hypnotized or something. I mean, I've been, like, for instance, if one of the worst things to do to me is to abruptly, like, give me, like, wake me out of it. If I'm right down in the depths of it, I almost had a heart attack like about a week ago. My son came into the room And I was sitting and I was deeply, deeply into that place. And he stood beside me and he went with his hands right in front of my face. And I've screamed the loudest. I scared the living daylights out of him. He scared the living daylights out of me. But it's after I'd sort of calmed down and sort of felt normal again, I started thinking about that and thinking about how, you know, they say don't wake up people who are sleepwalking. Whatever you do, because it's really traumatic. It felt kind of like that.
It's interesting that you mentioned meditation, because I did some hypnotherapy quite a few years ago now, and I accessed this part of my brain in hypnotherapy that kind of like woke my senses up to this whole new level. And I wonder if it's something about accessing, I mean, I don't know, I'm just kind of riffing with the idea, but it's sort of, if you're able to kind of like turn off your senses and turn off your inner critique and turn off everything that you know and just kind of follow that feeling, if that's kind of the part of the brain that you need in order to kind of get to that state.
I think you're totally spot on with this idea of accessing. There's a location for it. And my thing is it in the brain or is it in your gut? I just have a feeling that it's that, you know, they say your the gut is the second brain. I think it's the first brain, personally. I mean, if you look at the gut, it looks like a brain. Yeah, it does. It's, if you look at the intestines, it's like a brain that's been like not all squashed into one tiny little place. And if you look at them, they're very similar looking things. And they apparently, and you might want to, this is something I've heard, so it might not be true, but I think this is true. It sounds true. Where in the womb, when the fetus is developing, the brain and the stomach, they split. They're the same thing, and they split into two things. One goes up and one stays where it is. Yeah, and they're connected. You know, they're totally connected. Your gut is where most of the serotonin in your that you use in your body's develop is made, and that's why people talk about diet as being, you know, you are what you eat and all that stuff. My feelings is anything that happens, like you've got what makes us different from animals, like my cat, for instance. They just go around. Most of the time, cats are very quiet. I believe they only meow because they're trying to communicate with us, because they see us using our mouths and they're trying to do the same thing. But if you leave them by themselves, they don't really say much. They just live very, very quiet lives. And I think that we are almost like, we're like that, but we've got this mad brain happening where it's we've got a consciousness and we have an intellect. Well, some of us do. I've been in America too long, and I wonder. But you've got like you're a quiet monkey, right?
Yeah.
Maybe 150,000 years ago, we were like all the other animals.
Uh-huh.
And then bit by bit, we started to develop our language, labeling things. And then we woke up, we became conscious beings, and we then developed our intellects and then developed our... And here we are now with iPhones and all this from dust, which is amazing. But I think that songs, I think that we were singing before we were speaking. I think singing is a very, very, very ancient behavior that humans and all animals do, and mm-hmm. and so tapping into that, you have to shut the brain down. And you know, talking about hypnopsychotherapy, mm-hmm. I had it as well. It's a pretty amazing thing to do, I didn't access any new like bits like you did, but I definitely felt like mm-hmm. there was a similarity.
Yeah.
I think it's just useful to like relax, isn't it? And to, you know, yeah, to reach a state where you're not overthinking things. There's mm-hmm. loads of scientific proof that meditating is incredibly helpful in all walks of life. You know, and the other thing, Fran, that I find amazing is when we started working together and I tried, you know, the way that you were suggesting to sort of just essentially just listen to that inner voice, that almost childlike, animalistic kind of most ancient voice, it really did lead to some beautiful melodies, you know, and the reason
that's
why
they all are.
Yeah. And it was kind of a bit of a surprise to me because I've always been someone who's really loved and gotten inspired by the mechanics and the technicalities of songwriting, mm-hmm. you know, but you yeah. talked about writing from the head down and that those songs that are written literally from the head down are the closest we've got to a real magic spell. So
yeah, the below the neck.
Yeah. Yeah, so like, can we get into like how we as writers can maybe access that space a little bit more?
That's a really good question. I think, right, okay, so there's moments where I'll be on stage, and again, that's quite a, you go into a bit of a meditative state, and I stand, you know, if you're threading a needle, you put your tongue between your teeth, and you when you're concentrating on something like that, I can't do that when I'm on stage because obviously I'm singing. So I stand on my tiptoes. That's my putting my tongue between my teeth. But my whole career, I stand on my tiptoes on stage, and I go into this.
And that's Fran. You mean you physically stand on tiptoes, or do you mean metaphorically?
No,
stand
no,
on
no.
Tiptoes?
Actually, physically stand. It's like,
wow.
It's like I say, it's like when you put your tongue between your teeth, it helps you concentrate. And I go, yeah. I stand on my tiptoes. So you're standing on your tiptoes. It's very much like this thing you're saying about hypnopsychotherapy. So I always think what that is the hypnopsychotherapist gives you things. Say your brain has about 8 arms, right? Imagine it was like an octopus, and it gives each of the arms something to hold. And once all the arms are holding all these different bits of information, it can't, there's no more arms left. So it sort of goes into this state. And I think when you're on stage, standing on your tiptoes, balancing on your tiptoes for a whole gig, you're trying to stay in tune, you're trying to remember the lyrics, you're giving your brain all of these different tasks to do, then suddenly you dip into this place, this waking dream place where all the cool stuff is. And somehow, like, I've watched myself, like, you know, when people film the band playing a gig, and I'm like, wow, I'm in that place, totally lost in that place. So you can do it that way. You can take drugs if you want. I wouldn't advise it, but a lot of people do. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of amazing creative people have been mega smackheads.
But don't you think by now, with everything that's happened, and to a lot of the people that have suffered at the hands of drugs, like, there's got to be another way.
There is,
you know, like, but it's there's got to be, yeah.
It's just easier. I think it's just, and especially with something like heroin, like, I've never done it, and I would never do it because just from what I've heard from people I know that have done it, you never, ever, ever stop thinking about it. It's like, as soon as you do it, I mean, I've had morphine and when I've been in hospital, and it's like your brain or your body or whatever, it's just like, give me more of that. I want that. That's the best thing I've ever had. It makes me feel great.
Whereas, God, I mean, I get high from watching nature. Like, literally, sometimes I'll see the tree outside my window lit up at sunset, and I'm like, oh my God. Literally, I'm so kind of...
That's cool.
High.
Yeah.
But
that's great. And it's free. And it's good for your health. So, and the other thing is, you could also do something like jumping into freezing cold water will do it. It's like trying to get trying to get in touch with the animal, trying to shut that chattery, annoying, most of the time, voice in your head that just won't shut up. It's the voice that keeps you awake at night, the voice that tells you you look terrible when you look in the mirror. It's the inner critic, you know, as you mentioned before.
Why do you think that it's not prioritised in, you know, in a lot of cases? You know, there's a lot of times when the song kind of comes second to the production. Why do you think that is?
It's harder to divine a song than design a song.
That's such a beautiful quote. Like, that's amazing.
It is. It just is. And what is also happening just now, I feel, in the music industry, because we're in an industry, leans really upon this being industrious and making lots and lots of stuff.
Yeah.
And there's not much room for divining when you're in an industry. There is room for it. But like, I remember there was a moment about 17 years ago where producers began to you could see how producers were looking at music and saying, listen, I'm making this record. I'm making it sound like this. I'm doing pretty much everything. And this band just comes in and does their thing. And I make it sound amazing. And I even help them write the song and the arrangement and all of the rest of it. And then, but they get all the money. and now cut to 17 years later and you have the people making, if you look at the top 40, all the songwriters are producers now. And so songwriters, like
That's
as the
so
traditional,
true.
The traditional ones, like myself, they're they've kind of been elbowed out. But I'll tell you right now, a producer is not a songwriter. Songwriters are ancient. Again, it's this ancient thing. Like, we're ancient people. They talked about songwriters in the Bible. You know, they're old soul people, and they are storytellers. Maybe songwriter is not the right word to use. Maybe it's a storyteller. Singers aren't storytellers either. They're singers. But everybody wants to be a songwriter because songwriters get paid the most and they get lots of kudos. And
What would be the ideal then? You know, and I'm interested in things like, you know, in terms of, okay, so there is an industry, and those of us that are in the industry, it is industrious and we have to create. But what would be the ideal in terms of how long that type of songwriter would want to write? You know, like, how long would you like, you know, what would that ideal uncompromising space look like for you?
Well, I think you need as much time as possible, because a lot of again, so when you're writing, when you're not designing songs, when you're divining songs, there's a lot of the time that you need a lot of time. You also need a lot of time when you're designing songs as well, I think, to go away from them for a month or two and then come back to them. Like, because you know what it's like when you get into writing a song, you go, oh, I've got something here. And then you wake up the next day and you come back to it and it's like, oh, I think that's shit. And then you come back to the next day and you're like, oh, actually, that bit's good and that's the bit that's shit. And then you come back to the next day and it's like, wait a minute, the bit that I thought was shit's actually good and the bit that I thought was good was actually shit. So,
yeah.
Right? So you have, the thing is, your brain is trying to, if you're writing in what I think is in a pure kind of unfiltered way, your brain is really hard to judge those types of songs. So you need a long time to sit with it. And then you just put it, like if it's a canvas, like imagine it was a canvas and all your songs are canvases and they're in your studio. Mm-hmm. You just throw a drape over that one and don't look at it for a couple of months. And then come back to it and look at it a couple of months later, and you'll see, oh, it's all the paint has vanished. It didn't. It was an illusion. I was just kidding myself on. Or you take it off and it's still there and it's still got legs. And that's, that takes time, not to write the physical, the actual thing, but it takes time to come back to it and see if it's still got legs. And there's a, there's so many songs that I hear and it, they come out with such a flurry of excitement and lots of promotion and everything, and then within 2 months they're gone.
It's so interesting talking to you about this, because whenever I release an album, I have this period afterwards where I get this kind of like awful sinking feeling where I can't access anything and I can't write, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? And do you know, now you've said that, I'm like, well, that makes sense. It's like you put everything into a body of work and then you have to allow some time.
I've had moments like, you know, the one that you're talking about where you get that low, weird, drained feeling. And I've had it so many times now.
Yeah.
And a really lovely thing happens. It comes eventually. Yeah. It comes and you don't rush it. You just, life comes at you and you, And also, there's a lot of stuff that has happened to us when before we could speak, and there's lots of things that are trapped down there that we have got nothing to connect it to, and these are the things I think that bubble up. I'm still trying to figure out what is it about a song that. I'm getting closer to what it is about a song that maybe makes the hairs on my arm stand up or moves me to tears. And it's it's an emotional thing, and it's encoded into the melody or the way the person sings it. But the melody is very key to this. When you hear something, you can take a really good example, much simpler example. You know when someone shouts at you, is angry at you when you're driving your car, and they shout out the window, you fucking, you know, really horrible, and you feel dreadful. I mean, I feel dreadful when someone does that, or someone flips you off or gives you that look or whatever, and I feel horrible. I used to think, that was me feeling horrible. But then I realised maybe what that was I was just tasting a bit of their chocolate mousse. You know, I was just tasting a bit of them. And then, you know, then you go, oh my God, they feel terrible. They're having such a shit life right now. I'm glad I don't feel like that. You got a little taster of it, but it's not yours. And I think that's what happens when a songwriter comes and something from below comes up, bubbles up, they put it into a song while they're in this dreamy place, they sing it to someone else, and that someone else feels that feeling. They taste that and they recognize it in themselves, because I think we all have very similar emotional weather, and it taps into our empathy for other people. I think comedy does that as well. You know, so it's so mysterious.
And even in that mystery, you know, and I kind of feel like this might be a bit of a binary question, but do you also use that instinct and that gut feeling to know when it's finished, when the song is done?
There was an artist, a painter who, in the old days, like in the, I think it was the Impressionist days, he would sneak into the gallery, and with a palette under his jacket, and keep painting, trying to finish his painting.
And that's brilliant.
I went to art school as a painter, and I never could finish a painting, but I always knew when a song was done. I mean, you can add as much production to a song as you like, but that's not that the song should be finished before that point. That's just the production. You know, that's the recording. the recording of the song and the writing of the song completely different. You should, they're not. And so the writing of the song, you just know. You just feel like it's just like you know when you've gone mm-hmm. to the bathroom. You know what I mean? You just go, all right, I've had a pee. I've drunk that water 2 hours ago and here's me peeing. And there's, it's like I had this experience when I was three. Here's this song when I'm, you know, in my 30s and 40s or whatever. And, or my 20s. It's very straightforward, and it is binary, but that's what it is, you know.
Yeah, it's like I think I've sometimes felt that when a song is done, I sort of feel this undeniability about it. I'm like, it's just. I mean, this is gonna sound super cocky, but it's like it's just unbelievably and undeniably good, and. You know, and it just is, and
if it is, know, good. Either,
yeah, like, well, yeah. I mean, and
but others, do you have the same when it's shit? I have the same when it's shit. Most of the time, I have that undeniable feeling, but it's shit.
Well, I don't have no. It's like this is the undeniable one. The undeniable feeling is like a different layer. It's a little bit like, for me, it's like. A final kind of layer of gold that you're like, this is so true and this is so pure to my life and my existence that, and in fact, actually, maybe we're talking about slightly different things.
No, I don't think so. I think you're saying, for interrupting, when you get it, when you've caught it, when you've captured it, there is absolutely no doubt about it. Right. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. And I also find that it's at such a point that you kind of don't care if anyone else
doesn't like
gets
it
or not. Yeah. You're like, because you're like, if they don't, then they're silly. Because this is, you know, that kind of goes to my head. And it's so, so interesting.
Yeah.
Gosh, how fascinating. Well, Fran, I mean, I am so grateful to you for your friendship and for just, you know, being the way you are with regards to songwriting, that pure, that kind of, you know, real pursuit of the pure art of it. So thank you so much. And thank you so much for your time. I also know you've just reissued the 2007 album, The Boy With No Name. So we know how busy you are with promo. And so thank you, you know, for taking the time to speak with us.
Fran, thank you so much. It's been such a joy talking to you.
Anytime. I really like talking about it because every time I talk about it, I take a layer of the onion away. Sooner or later, I'm going to get to the nub of it one day. I'll call you when I think I've got it.
Well, we'll be here and... in a way, I hope the adventure never finishes, though. You've been listening to The Detail. I'm Katie Mellower.
And I'm Polly Scattergood. See you next time. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, it's been lovingly made by me and Katie. The editing, however, has been done by me in my studio. So if you're a fan of this podcast and you'd like to hear more, receive additional content and the odd special treat sent directly from me to you, please head on over to my Patreon page to give your support. The address is patreon.com/Polly Scattergood. Thanks so much.